I envision the full range of excitement that San Bernardino has become known for. Just picture that.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso.
Meanwhile, while I adjust these totally whacked out things on the board, people like to turn knobs. I don't know what it is. Apparently, it's fun to turn knobs. So, Today Tonight show is, as advertised, we have our friend Skyler here, and I don't think it's going to be a normal question and answer show, although we're going to try and keep it on kind of a sane level where we talk about things that people will understand instead of who did what last week or whatever the hell. Skyler's been writing about UFOs and the paranormal and all kinds of other weird shit for how long? Since you were a baby?
Since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, but professionally, since I was 18, along with music and film and sociology and, like, slightly more relevant topics. But I've been interested in all those subjects since I was a very small child.
You have to do this, otherwise it's, you have to talk right into the top. Oh, look at that, see? No wonder I don't have to turn it up. Or, oh, wow, we don't have the microphone that actually has a little boom on it that goes so you can just kind of sit there with it on your face.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's rather loud.
She's also founder of the League of Western Freudian Indeterminate...
Intermediatists. Which is a term that Charles Fort himself coined to explain all this, the interconnectedness of all things, people, events... phantasmagoria and whatnot, which he wrote about in four books between the years of 1919 and 1932, and he is our patron saint, and I will go into that in greater detail as soon as I get my bearings, I suppose, and make you guys listen to obnoxious music, including hopefully not my relatives.
Yeah, you got relatives listening tonight.
I never use a CD player,
so... If it doesn't come up right away, I apologize.
Oh, okay.
Why? Did you want to just start playing music?
I thought this is a radio show, and I have to apologize
also.
Well,
it's an interview show and music.
Yes. Okay. Well, then you should tap me on the knee and let me know which part's coming when. But no, I...
Whenever we feel like it, that's how it goes.
All right. I should have dropped some acid. Oh, I shouldn't say that. No, I have to apologize.
Why, you got some?
To anyone that may be listening, if I don't sound... completely decent. I've been explaining all the horrors and terrible events in the history of Los Angeles and Hollywood specifically to some rather deranged figures this last week. And
Skyler is working with a tour company in Hollywood now, giving tours of the Hollywood area. That's what she's talking about.
Yeah, here. it's really awesome because picture this, you know, I shouldn't maybe say this because I told one of the girls I was going to do this thing tonight, but she runs a golden retriever rescue and she's really busy. So the other one, she designs cakes in the shape of phalluses and then goes.
I thought she said she did Tupperware dildo parties.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. Oh my lord. Okay. Yeah. It's an eclectic group of people that don't know that Lana Turner wasn't discovered at Schwab's, or that Ed Wood used to hang out at Gold Diggers on Santa Monica Boulevard. Right. And
he did not die in his apartment. He died in somebody else's place, but I can't remember where that is. Isn't it up in the valley somewhere?
Ed Wood, the director of Plan
9, of which we always play the beginning at the start of this show.
Yeah, no, I believe he died in his apartment, which was off of, I want to say, Cahuenga, north of Hollywood Boulevard.
It is.
Yeah, that
it's
was
where the
last apartment.
It's next to the 7-Eleven.
Yeah,
it used to be a horrible, rundown place, which is when he lived there, near the Plowboy liquor store.
Yeah.
But now it got gentrified or something.
Oh.
So about, I don't know, 8 years ago. Now it's quote unquote nice.
Oh, whatever that means. I have no idea. But I don't know. I'm more interested in the places that people lived and where they died, because it's no fun to discover a dead body. You know, but Gold Diggers down the street on Santa Fe. For those of you in the Southern California area, there's a small mural of Jimi Hendrix in a little alley around, like, just directly to the right of Gold Diggers. Because, you know, of course, the landlord goes, "Oh, Jimi Hendrix slept here." And it's like, you know, we don't have
alley.
No, in some apartment building, and so he painted this mural of Jimi Hendrix. Down the street from that, of course, is the completely inexplicable mural of, I think it's Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I haven't seen
the Beatles.
One.
It's like,
yeah, I've seen the Beatles.
Like,
one.
Okay, the Beatles. Yeah, okay. Why these three people? Son of a Nazi from Austria, who's ruined our state of California, if you don't mind me saying. An orphan who's buried with her relatives, actually, strangely enough, in Westwood. And then Elvis Presley.
Marilyn Monroe is buried with her relatives?
Yeah, you know, I don't get this. It's like, I knew Joe DiMaggio, and I just have had to revisit this stuff lately, like historical facts about town. But I knew that Joe DiMaggio picked up Marilyn's body from the morgue because it laid unclaimed for some time, and he buried her at this very small and for the most part unknown cemetery in Westwood because she had relatives there, even though she grew up in an orphanage.
It's an expensive cemetery.
Yeah, I mean,
Frank Zappa's buried there.
Merv Griffin, Rodney Dangerfield,
yeah.
Bob Crane, Betty Page, you know.
Betty Page?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Whose first anniversary of her death was the 11th.
Natalie Wood.
Yeah, Natalie Wood. Although I can never find Natalie Wood. I don't.
Aren't they auctioning off the crypt next to Marilyn Monroe's?
Hugh Hefner's owned that for some time.
Oh, does
some
he?
Time. Yeah, yeah,
is
yeah.
he the one that's auctioning it?
I don't think he's auctioning it.
Oh,
I think, I, you know, well, Hugh Hefner is quite skilled in the art of marketing himself, and he's owned that plot for some time. I do know that the fellow that's buried above Marilyn's crypt is buried face down because he wanted to spend eternity, you know, on top of Marilyn.
Right.
But
that's the story.
No, I believe it's true, actually.
Have you looked in there?
No.
You can't. No. I was in New Orleans, and some of the crypts actually are breaking.
Oof.
And I looked through one of them, and I couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
So I took a flash picture and came out. You could see a skull and some bones inside.
Yeah, that's a rather cursed place, actually. I mean,
what, New Orleans?
Yeah, for many, many reasons. But speaking of which, well, you were there for that Andy Kaufman tribute where Andy Kaufman, the comedian who's 25th anniversary of his death.
Yeah, you have to stay close to the mic. You're drifting in and out of.
It's because it looks like I'm about to lick a giant clown nose. That's why.
You can take the windscreen off if you want.
All right. Hello. Oh, that's better. All right, you. Okay. Yeah, you can probably tell that I've really gone out of my way to avoid doing this kind of thing because I have a tendency to ramble on.
That's why I keep interrupting you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm just waiting for word from somebody on Facebook, which is usually where I get messages from during the show, to tell us,
it's working.
You're not coming in. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And if not, at least it'll go up. Wow, that's loud. It'll go up on writingmysterioso.com within a few days. I had Tim Beckley on last week. I still haven't put the...
But you had him by phone, right?
Yeah,
back east? Yeah.
Yeah, he's in New York.
Yeah, yeah. No,
it's funny because I said he had published many things, including some disreputable what some might consider disreputable. He got kind of irritated about that.
Really?
He goes, all of this is disreputable. I said, look, Tim, I said that because saying things like disreputable grows makes more people listen, and it worked.
Oh, yeah.
We had more people listening.
Really?
And he told stories about Mosley and about doppelgangers and about Men in Black.
Oh,
and,
God.
And he recounted the Eagle River Joe Simonton story and all kinds of stuff. Somebody, Peter Robbins, said, tell him to tell the cookie story.
The cookie story?
And I thought it was something really weird and disgusting or something, just something not well known, but apparently it was just because he likes that sighting. I do too. Who wouldn't like somebody being given pancakes or cookies from outer space?
I know what you're talking about. Okay,
Joe Simonton.
I've been in touch with him because I'm writing Richard Shaver and Stanislav Zukowski art show up for 40 and times, and I have to do the interviews this week, which
your level's down again.
My potassium. You can get a heart attack from having potassium levels that are too low. Did you know that?
Okay. Well, I better keep eating my potassium then.
And bananas. It's all about bananas.
Nanners?
Nanners, yes.
I eat dried ones.
Okay.
This is weird.
You want a different microphone?
I don't know. I want two microphones simultaneously because I can't hear. Now I can't hear myself at all.
Because you're not speaking in the microphone.
I have to do it like this. Oh,
yes.
Through the top. That's right.
Yeah. I kind of rest it on my chin, even though it's not hygienic, because then I know
there's voice going into the microphone, and we're getting the right levels.
I'm going to get the R2-D2 virus from you people.
R2-D2 virus.
It's the next one. It's the hot new virus coming straight out of Compton or Paraguay or someplace.
You've heard the H1N1 rap song, haven't you?
No, I don't want to. Do I want to?
I don't know. You might.
Oh, my God. Is it like a PSA?
It's done by a doctor from Harlem who likes to rap. So he did a whole album of health-related rap songs.
Oh, that's like, there was that weird choir. No, it was like that, like, I want to say barbershop quartet of doctors in the 60s that did songs about
that.
Like STDs, and it's really rather disturbing.
Yeah, there was a song I have on here by them called Her Vagina.
Oh, gosh.
I guess
don't say that word. I might have a relative listening.
What's wrong with that word? There's nothing wrong. They're just words.
They're just words. Words only have meaning if you import the meaning into them. Oh, good God.
There it is. H1N1 rap by Dr. Clark.
Okay.
I'll let you hear a little bit. We can leave the microphone on while it's on. Nope, that's not it. Skipped over it. Why'd it do that? There it goes.
H1N1 swine flu infection. For intervention, I bring convention. Dr. Clark, here I come to make your head numb. Health hot, lesson one to stop the bedlam. If you think you infected, seek attention. If you haven't, stay at home so you don't spread none. Use tissue when you sneeze, cause you can spread some. Cause coughed up germs is where it spreads from. I'm recommending washing hands for protection. Front and back real thorough while you count.
He's talking about washing your hands.
The sanitizer, I advise you get it. Why? It makes germs die when you rub and let it dry. Don't touch your eyes, your mouth, your nose, your face. That's how you get infected, so you better play it safe. Long-term outcome, we'll see the income. Never sick again from the H1N1.
Hi, I'm Dr. John Clark. Before I wrote my lyrics, I went to flu.gov and got some great information. Log on to flu.gov, and together we can stop the H1N1.
Oh, did you guys know this fascinating fact? No, they outlawed public kissing in Paris, France, because of the H1N1 virus, something like 20,000 cases in the country of France. It caused their equivalent
of the CDC
question.
Does H1N1 cause death any more often than the
regular
normal
flu? Do we? No, I don't know. I mean,
who decided that this was a deadly strain of something?
I
everybody gets flu every winter, and it's a different strain each time. Not everybody, but a great deal of people get flu every winter.
Do you get flu shots? I certainly don't.
No.
Did you get the Hep C vaccine in the 70s?
HIV? When I get to the age where if I get sick, I'm going to die, then I will get the vaccination, because why screw with your own, your immune system.
Yeah, immunity. Yeah, I really have.
And plus, I don't trust any of a lot of the vaccines. Well, like I said, if I'm facing death, yeah, I'll take the chance.
Yeah, no, a friend of mine is severely asthmatic, and he got the flu vaccine. And old people and small children are supposed to do the same thing, but I don't know if that's necessarily true because we all know about the hepatitis trials in the late 70s that led to the what became known as the GRID virus, gay-related immune deficiency. I don't even know if I'm being listened to.
We're getting the booty call. Meanwhile, we're losing listeners. Yeah, we're getting the booty call, but I don't have the phone line hooked in, so... I promise you. Wait, here. I'll put it up to the microphone, and you can tell everybody it's a booty call. Here you go. You're so nice. It's calling in for a booty call. Thank you so much. Well, come on up. All right. Thanks. Bye. What does that happen? Why does that happen on this show? I don't know. I think there's a bathroom key out there.
You didn't need to say that. Oh, my God.
It was the H1N1 rap. I told you this was going to be a strange show. It's Radio Mysterioso. Skylar Alpha Grin is on with us. It's funny, you know, when you're talking to Skylar, it's hard to get her on a subject and keep her on the subject, as you notice. I wanted to ask her about her UFO sighting and also, you know, why the hell write about this stuff? Why is it so interesting? Why, even though nobody's giving you money for it or you're not getting famous off it or anything, why do it? Because, of course, you know that everybody that does this makes a ton of money and becomes very famous. I was trying to find something that I recently downloaded that I wanted to play. Oh, yeah, the Chicken Slacks. Let's listen to Chicken Slacks here for a minute. This is by RIAA, who I've played stuff from before.
It's Saturday night, the zippiest night of the week. Go out on the town, have fun, live it up a little. It's for occasions like this, when you want to look your very best. Look good, feel great. And
Chicken Slacks. Chicken Slacks. Chicken Slacks.
A suit with a sense of occasion.
Okay, Chicken Slacks by RIAA, the mashup artist. And Skylar's back.
Hello.
Is that working?
Am I on?
There we go.
All right.
I thought when you came back, what I had advertised it was. We were going to talk about was when we did talk was about writing about weird stuff. People say, how do you get that idea? How did you write that book? Where do you find all that information? And I say, you look it up.
I say you investigate and perhaps go to jail, perhaps get frostbite, perhaps be called a loony. Because I think first-person experiences are very important, but also research.
You've gone to jail as a result of doing research?
Well, this isn't a very...
I got a ticket once. That was about the worst that's happened when I... Oh, and I've been yelled at and chased off of places, too, but that's about the worst.
It depends, because it's like... I mean, I've been a legitimate journalist, not to say that writing about the paranormal or the ufological subjects makes you illegitimate in any way whatsoever. I mean, I could go on a great debate about that, but as a quote-unquote legitimate journalist, I've gotten in some trouble. Did you read that piece I wrote about trying to join the LAPD last year?
No, you told me about it.
Oh,
though.
Can I tell the story?
Yes, please do.
This is really funny. The Los Angeles Police Department apparently was so desperate to get new recruits that they had this event at the Staples Center, and they said if you came down and had a catered lunch and met William Bratton and all these police chiefs and saw our whoop-de-whoop videos and took this test, you'd get this catered lunch and you'd get tickets to go see the stadium football team that played.
Not the lingerie football.
No, lingerie. The Raptors or something. And so I thought, this is really ridiculous. And so I show up, and this piece was really fun to write because, they told you, you know, after the Randy Newman themed pen, you know, I Love LA themed recruitment video and all the great things about being a LAPD cop, like, you could be. You can be 18 years old, have absolutely no higher education, no knowledge of humanity, sociology, the foibles of human nature, etc., and be armed to the teeth and beat the holy crap out of your fellow citizens with total impunity. It was great. And I was like, okay, I will go and do this quiz, and I will do this essay, these essay questions, but they reminded us all that we had to be totally... honest. So, you know, in the field of, you know, certain mind expansion chemicals, I was completely honest. I even raised my hand and I said, you know, THC is not a drug. It is a chemical element. And I, mind you, I hate pot. I can't stand it. I don't smoke it. I don't look down upon those who do. In fact, I was just quoted on the KCET website talking about how here in Los Angeles, Mayor Villagrosa, you know, and his henchmen are planning to propose or have proposed. Do forgive me, I'm very tired. This thing where the pot dispensaries have to be 1,000 feet away from residential areas, which there is basically no place like that, you know, at the same time, and there are people that could go into greater detail about this with much more authority. If California legalized marijuana, our budget deficit would basically go away, you know. Anyway, so I raised my hand and I told the sheriff in front of me, I said, THC is not a drug. It is a chemical agent in marijuana, as far as I know, that makes it get people, you know, goofy. And they just looked at me very badly, and I scored 98% on my essay questions. And then they kept trying to recruit me. And I got things in the mail for 6 months, 7 months, phone calls, everything. But I got one piece of paper which said I was permanently disqualified for admitting to having used illegal drugs at some point in my distant past. It's really funny. I was going to frame it, actually. You know, but
the rejection letter?
The rejection letter. You are infinitely qualified. However, you've been permanently disqualified. This is on the same paper. For admitting to using illegal narcotics at any point in your past. And I'm like, whatever. Because the polygraph test that I would have gotten in level 7.
Level 7?
No, they have like this like parfait of like 9 phases you have to go through to qualify to join the LAPD. And I was like, dude, okay, you know, what about Officer Zed from Police Academy? How'd he get in? I can't, you know? It's like, whatever. Funny article, but I got a lot. I got some weird phone calls after that, too. But
what, from the police?
No, I mean, they were trying to recruit transgendered people specifically. Like, I ended up on all their mailing
LAPD?
Lists. I'll have to send you this. It's hilarious. It's like, we're a rainbow of diversity. You know, with literally a rainbow, because I live in West Hollywood, and there's like a rainbow and this like transvestite, and I swear to God, it was like, I think every market they could go for.
They want a chick with dick officers, huh?
It's weird, because like, in West Hollywood, well, you live in the vicinity, it's like, they're the sheriffs.
You live in West Hollywood? You live in the little gerrymander that comes out, right?
It's, yeah. Because are you in L.A. proper?
Yeah. We're two blocks south of West Hollywood.
It's like, it doesn't really affect me, except that I'm fearful of both the sheriffs and the LAPD, because they seem to have jurisdiction wherever they want to, as do the sheriffs and the highway patrol. You know, the highway patrol can pull you over and give you a ticket, you know, any place. You don't have to be on a highway.
The only run-in I had with the highway patrol, they pulled me over because they said I was weaving around.
Yeah.
I was just sleepy. I wasn't drunk.
Right.
And they said, oh, okay.
Oh.
That was it.
Yeah, really?
That didn't bother me after that.
They
said, why don't you let your wife drive? And when I was married at the first wife, and I said, I got out of the car and I was talking to them. I said, I don't like my wife driving my car because she can't drive a stick. Oh. At least not this car. And they said, oh, we understand. Oh. Well, be careful. I figured I'd do that guy thing, and it worked. I guess it did.
You know what's really funny? It's my boyfriend, who I went out with 10 years ago, who's probably not listening because he doesn't even have a landlight in his apartment. His nephew is a LAPD officer in West Hollywood, and it's really funny because he comes over to visit me and stuff, and he's like, I taught him how to change his own diaper or whatever, and I'm like, oh my Lord, you know. And now he's a cop, and he's like, I don't know, 18, 19. It's just frightening. It's like an armed teenagers with anger issues for the most part. Please don't anybody look up the spelling of my name that's involved in law enforcement in any capacity, by the way, because there are some nice...
I'd look it up right now if the internet was working.
Well, luckily no one can spell my name.
Yeah, well, they can see it because it's here and it's on Radio Mysterios. I mean, it's on the UFO Mystic site.
That's awesome. And,
I'll go back and on purpose spell it wrong if you want.
That's all right. Anyway, I don't know.
Wow, they're right about the computer being dead. Well, yeah, I was going to say, speaking of gerrymandering, yuck.
I have like 20 CDs with very specific songs here, all like in some order of something.
We didn't answer the question, though. We got gerrymandered away from it. Why write on the stuff? And how the hell do you... You don't really make a career out of it, I guess, unless you're Nick Redfern.
Well, I did spend the summer some production company in town.
We'll get Skylar to talk about this writing about
the writing.
Stuff.
Writing. Oh well, how do you put into words things that are very often difficult to explain with the naked eye, even if those naked eyes are your own and you're seeing it yourself? I mean, I guess. Is the computer being bad? Anyway, I don't know what happened. I've been accused of being many things, an abductee, a walk-in, a being from outer space. When I was a small child, I really did think that I was put on the planet to sort of observe humanity and not be so much a part of it, which I've sort of grown out of. But I did start, I guess I got into weird phenomena. I guess the easiest way for me to explain this is that my mother is a very strange lady, and it took me a long time to come to this conclusion, but she spoke in tongues, she saw angels, she corresponded with Mother Teresa when I was a very small child, even when I didn't know who that was, and by the time I was six, I realized she had a connection to something kind of otherworldly and far beyond, you know, the mundane nonsense that I had to deal with, you know, people and traffic and food and school and people and all that stuff. And it took me a really long time to realize. It was sort of like, okay, say you're hippies and you have kids. How are those kids going to rebel against you? They go and become accountants, you know? So I looked for, I'd say what I thought she had, which was a connection to something divine, which I didn't really want to be a part of because I thought all her Christian friends were hypocrites, and some of them were worse than that, far worse. So I kind of looked towards other stranger things and, you know, took Stanton Friedman's motto when I was like 6 years old, you know, watch the skies to heart, and saw some real weird stuff. Got a phone call from a man who committed suicide, you know.
What is that about? What do you mean?
Oh, I don't really want to get into it, but when I was not very old, well, I don't want to get into it, but we were...
How does it connect to the seeing the weird stuff, though? Or being interested in it?
How do you mean?
Well, you mentioned it.
This, the phone call?
Yeah, you mentioned the phone call in connection with the question about why be interested in it and then why write about it.
I think, well, because... I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence to a certain degree at this point in my life because I've had stalkers. I have had some bad experiences. I've had some, you know, if you want to go out on a limb and say negative entities weaseling their way around in my life, maybe as a result of my interest in this stuff. I don't know that it's necessarily beneficial. It's far more interesting than, you know, going the normal route. You know, I've always thought it was a very strange thing in the U.S., you know, it's like, okay, you're in high school, you have parents. Well, you know, the general route is you have parents, you go to high school, your dad's a lawyer, he wants you to get into the law profession. Oh, you must be a very sane person by the time you're 40 after devoting a good portion of your adult life to doing something that someone else wants you to do and you don't have any interest in. And so to some degree, I was kind of lucky that my whole family is, with the exception of the one person that may be listening, from what I can tell, and someone who I'm related to was a priest for 10 years and then worked for Disneyland and then built guitars. And yeah, I don't know. I just didn't go the normal route, I guess. But I mean, you know, you look up in the sky and you see things you can't explain and you already have a predilection towards believing not in their necessarily in their existence or knowing even what they are or claiming to know, but just in having the open-mindedness to believe that there's something greater and more interesting and more fascinating to this world than car insurance and you know, anniversary presents and dog food and taxes. And now I'm kind of rambling because I'm hypoglycemic. I haven't eaten since noon.
Why don't you tuck into that burrito that you brought?
I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, because I personally...
It is, actually.
I mean, it's weird because it's like, on one hand, it's like...
Except for the guy, the call with the guy that killed himself. What does that have to do with it? Unless you don't want to go into it at all.
Well, it's just... It was...
It's part of what pulled you into this, right?
Well, it was... It was, yeah, it was, it was, that was something maybe I shouldn't have mentioned, but that was something that I realized was kind of like a definitive moment, because we didn't find out he had committed suicide until sometime after, but precisely, you go into coroner stuff and all this stuff, but it was like, I was like 11 and a half or something, and I was like, I know, I mean, we're not talking to someone that's on this plane of existence, you know. And also, I semi-witnessed an exorcism. Actually, I'm lying. I didn't witness it, but I was with people. I was told the story of this exorcism at a Christian church in Pasadena when I was a little kid, and I had more belief in it than the people that had actually been there trying to keep the guy from hurling himself out of a plate glass window over the 210 freeway. I just find it funny. I mean, it's like, you know, something that's been in the news for some years, actually, but I thought, I don't know if you watched the Colbert Report.
Occasionally.
Like, I believe it was last week or the week before. I've been really busy. Stephen Colbert actually had, and it is a, you know, satirical program. He actually had the Vatican's expert on meteors on.
I saw that.
To explain the Catholic Church's position, which they've actually had for a number of years,
yeah,
on extraterrestrial life and the possibility of it. And, you know, he was a very articulate Jesuit claiming that, you know, well, who are we to say that God in his infinite wisdom and powers of creation hasn't created life someplace besides the planet Earth, third rock from the sun, and one really terribly insignificant galaxy in the Milky Way, you know?
Well, I don't think we're that insignificant. Any knot in the fabric of existence, I think, is important enough to be paid attention to.
Yeah. Well, I also try to take spiders outside and they get in the house, you know, because my one friend who years ago, he's a little more enlightened now, but he used to say, you know, oh, just squash them. You'll help them along, you know, reincarnate faster. And I don't necessarily believe
it's so
true.
It's your job to have people. You've been appointed the reincarnation officer.
He's a Crowleyite, mind you. He's kind of,
well.
He's like,
is that Brian?
It's stupid. He's not listening, so it doesn't matter. But I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But then I did see
made it your job to reincarnate things?
Well, you can't trust Satanists, and you can't trust most occultists. And I will put that out there because they are out for themselves. And I, for the most
certain occultists, the ones who will tell you about it, those are the ones that you shouldn't trust.
Because they're trying to indoctrinate
you. There's ego problems there. I didn't join the OTO. I joined the Builders of the Adytum for a couple of years.
Yeah.
They're pretty sedate. The people there were generally pretty nice and quiet and almost hippie-ish. But the OTO type people, a lot of them, I noticed, after being exposed to a few of them, my quote for them was when they first learned what was going on and got into it, their first question was, when do I get to smite?
yeah. I think there's an episode of Metalocalypse where Metalocalypse is this genius cartoon on Adult Swim about this metal band. You've got to see it. A death clock. And the bass player, William Murderface, has a near-death experience due to alcohol ingestion and tries to find religion. And he goes from church to church, and they actually nail, like the Church of Satan perfectly. It's just a sniffly, asthmatic, you know.
Fat guy.
Actually, really skinny guy.
Oh, okay.
Like, talking about the church parking, and don't park in front of the guy's house across the street because he will have you towed. And it's just, I don't know. It's like I am no expert in comparative religion, but, you know, I'd like to think that basically it all comes down to, you know, follow the golden rule and some other things. I mean, even the Ten Commandments are suspect because they've been juggled about so much. And
did you ever hear that George Carlin thing about the Ten Commandments? He reduces it to all. He gets rid of every commandment, I think. Maybe even thou shalt not kill. It's like a really inconsequential, stupid one. He says, oh, that's a good one. Like, thou shalt have no other gods before me or something like that.
No false idols or like.
Or maybe he got rid of all of them.
I think.
He explained each one and why it was ridiculous and useless.
I heard that in passing, actually, because in my house there are like these TVs on continuously, and I kind of like pick up things through the ether like that. But
last time I was there was for half the night it was a fish tank.
There's a fish tank? Oh, on the TV. Yeah. Well, we actually had people over. It's very quiet around my apartment sometimes, most of the time, except for the dueling televisions, and it's kind of like The Man Who Fell to Earth and various other things. But I did buy a black plastic tinsel tree this morning, making me... We're streaming.
Adam Gorightly says we're having some streaming issues, space bro.
I think
it's cutting off and coming back.
Streaming of consciousness, I think, perhaps. But we could always do this a second time with music involved, and I could be maybe not completely like insane, but
when are you not completely insane? That's why I hang out with you.
When I'm absolutely brilliant all the rest of the time, just ask anyone that is invisible.
But well, it you know what? It, the thing is, I had a whole memorial show for Mac Tony's a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I don't know, a month, and it didn't go out. But I recorded it, so it's on the site.
It's on
the RadioMysterioso.com site.
Right.
So most people, I get an audience of 10 or 20 or something, but then I get like 500 downloads that next week.
Oh, wow.
So most people, people don't have time to like, okay, I'm going to come to my computer and listen to this show from 8 to 10 p.m. It's more like it's the way podcasts are.
Right.
You listen to them at your convenience. Download it, listen to the car, whatever.
Right.
So everybody listening in the car, you're going to get the nice straight poop from this show.
It's going to be edited in any way? No, it doesn't. It just comes out like...
I edit some shows, but almost never. What I'll do is edit out where I'm going,
Yeah.
And also any kind of technical things. I just put them in Audacity. Or
you can
or
probably edit this down to like about 20 minutes and then throw in a bunch of my songs because I seriously no.
Okay, well let's play a song. We got one queued up off that one CD.
Oh no, don't play that. It's Dr. Octagon, who's actually really awesome, but it's about what's it called? Earth People from many years ago. He was one half of the Ultramagnetic MCs in Brooklyn, also known as Cole Keith, but that's a UFO-related song. Although I do actually have things to peddle that are really great that maybe you guys don't know about, but then I don't know. You can edit that out, too. But, like, No Means No. Everybody buy No Means No and Fetus and Sparks and maybe Hino and Jim Turwell.
I played Hino on the show and Sparks.
But it's the San Bernardino song by Hino.
It's what song?
He has a song about San Bernardino. And you
oh,
know,
is that who's a...
Yeah, it's like San Bernardino.
Can we hear that?
Sure.
This is for Adam Gorightly. Hino is a huge Hino fan.
God. Okay.
Did I have that Hino vinyl when we were roommates?
I don't remember.
I think I got it after. I've got like four or five Hinos on vinyl.
Super Bowl because it had his face in this tight close-up. All my records are in
I thought all of them had his face. One of them has I've got that one, and one he's got, it's one called Liebe Mutter where he's holding flowers.
And then
on the back there's a picture of a seal a baby seal for no reason.
Well, then there's a great one with him and the two German shepherds, you know, and really, unless you're fluent in German and or some kind of Wayne Newton-y, bar-hopping, 60s-ish, Aryan fantasy world thing.
Which one? The one that says
number
San Bernardino?
11.
Yeah, yeah, there
San
it is.
Bernardino,
it's
11.
Just called San Bernardino.
Like, and this is
there's a Frank Zappa song called San Bernardino, I think.
But he actually visited that place. I don't think Hino's ever been. Hino hasn't stepped foot in Southern California since the 90s, according to Jello Biafra.
It's like all the all the Germans that are all into cowboys and Indians and stuff, and there was a guy that there's probably more than one, like a country singer in Germany that's just all, you know, he sang about the Southwest and about Indians and about riding through the desert and all that, and he never went there. He'd never been there.
I think that's terrible.
Like, I think it's great.
Speaking as a journalist, I would never go that route. I mean, Herzog, there's a German for you.
That's right.
Hauling a boat up a mountain for 2 years. Damn the
peasants. Was it 2 years?
I was like, it took him like a year to get that damn boat up the mountain.
Okay.
And then there's that guy.
I remember that, and the guy that got bit by the snake and he cut his leg off or something with a chainsaw.
No, that's art. That's art. You must suffer for your art. It's so important.
And I was just a crew guy.
Yeah.
But I bet he got promoted after the director heard about
it. Well, nobody listening to this knows I'm secretly a quadruple amputee.
San Bernardino by Hino.
Freundschaft ein Leben lang hält und ruft der Berg San Bernardino. Rot steigt die Sonne über die Felsen, kommt Kameraden, steil führt der Weg hinauf, lasst alle Zweifel. Trotz Tod und Teufel, wer die Freiheit sucht, der steigt mit hinauf. San Bernardino, San Bernardino, auf den Gipfeln der ewigen Berge die Freiheit erleben, uns ruft der Berg. Gefühle, den Berg zu bezwingen. Wer kann beschreiben, was man da oben fühlt? Bergvagabunden, genießt
einmal dort, will man nie mehr fort. San Bernardino, San Bernardino, auf den Gipfeln der ewigen Berge die Freiheit erleben. San Bernardino, San Bernardino, da sind Männer, bei denen die Freundschaft ein Leben lang hält. Was ruft der Berg, San Bernardino? Uns ruft der Berg, San Bernardino. San Bernardino.
San Berdu. Hino.
Coming to a town in Florida near a retirement community near you in Florida.
Florida?
Yeah. No, he, for many years, was famous for playing Alpine Village and Torrance. And
really? When did he stop doing that?
When I lived in San Francisco, was I living in San Francisco? Mid, early 90s, I cornered Jello Biafra to ask him. I don't know. I ended up talking to Jello at some Iggy Pop show, and Iggy Pop was in his leather pants, and he was being a full of himself, as he often has been, from what I understand, according to many people I know and have read. And
I talked to him. He was very nice to me.
Oh, my Lord. We won't get into sordid stories of Rock's past.
All right.
No. I mean, none of which involve me, but, like, for instance, well, it doesn't matter because Iggy Pop's really not that important in any way. Well, he is, but he isn't. But it's all relative. That's one thing I'd like to impress upon people. Everything's relative. Anyway, Jello said that Hino stopped playing Alpine Village because there was a greater market for him in these retirement communities in Florida, which I think is really funny because he's like the Uber Aryan, and so many of the retirees in Florida aren't that way. So who else can I offend?
Yeah, there's a lot of Jewish people from the East Coast retiring to Florida.
Here's a German song. It's the stupidest song you'll ever hear. Ever. It's a tale of teenage rebellion. It's track number one. And it's sung by a tiny, tiny, tiny German man named Udo Dirkschneider.
Udo?
Udo.
And yeah, Udo. The only other Udo I know is Udo Kier from the Warhol movies.
This is the dumbest song you'll ever hear. It will haunt you. I'm a rebel.
It's still reading. Oh, here it goes.
Oh,
Does he scream at the end? No, just a long sustain.
No, I always forget. I only put this song on when I'm going to go play soccer with German midgets, which doesn't come around too often.
Oh, okay. I asked Skylar if she'd heard the version of Never Mind the Bollocks, done, the entire album done by Los Punk Rockers, which was done, I guess, sometime in the 80s in Spain.
Phonetically?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Raising down.
Yeah.
What's the time in Spain where the Ibiza?
Oh, you mean Castilian?
Castilian? Castilian.
This outpunks the Sex Pistols by a long shot.
Ever jewelry?
Yes. Our fascist head.
This is like putting Hong Kong movie like subtitles to music.
Yeah.
It's a German chicken now.
Anyway, I listen to this when I get tired of the Sex Pistols, because it's true punk rock.
Oh.
And it's recorded so badly too. It makes it even better.
I have a love song by the Monks. That's pretty punk rock.
Yes. I've only got a few Monks songs. Oh, Dropout Boogie. I have that. Is this a different version of it?
I'm not a collector. I am not a collector. I gave that up long ago. Kids of Whitney High to back that up.
I might have some on here. Well, I don't have to put your CD in if you want to hear one of your theme songs here.
Oh, I don't know. You know you are talking to a well-respected music journalist, by the way.
Yes, I do.
Okay. No, it was actually recommended to me recently that I put all my music writing together in a collection and publish it under the title Rock Lived.
This is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
It happens all the time. Yeah. We're complaining about publishing game. Back to writing about anomalies, UFO stuff. Our guest, the royal we, is Skylar Alfagren, who's been writing about this weird shit forever.
Too long. Why? Well, I say
as
why?
Long as, or my first article was on the Aetherius and the Unary Society. I wrote in 1988.
Oh my lord!
Terrible. Skylar read some of my articles and said, "What's wrong with you? Are you boring people?" Right at the beginning of it.
Say that?
Yes, you did.
I did.
You said, "I'm going to be brutally honest." I said, "Do it. Go ahead. I won't be offended."
Oh my god!
You read the first line and go, "Why would I want to even read it past this line?"
Jesus. I'm.
And you were right. And you're like, "Oh my god! Now, why would you want to read past this line? A lead is very important. The first paragraph is very important.
You got to grab them. You got to grab them.
And then you have to keep them.
Yeah. And
it's not like writing in high school or something. You have to write so people can be interested. Specifically, actually, people who aren't interested in the first place.
That's a challenge. That's a challenge. And I don't know what to say except that. Some editor told me once that I should try writing for a daily paper. Not that they exist anymore, but he explained this esoteric and phantom theory of the paragraph pyramid and journalism school stuff and how you put together copy.
Jack Boulware once, I was talking to him, he says, "I've lectured to journalism students." You know who Jack is, right?
Oh, yeah.
He said, "I've lectured to journalism students, and I have to fight it every time." He said, "I haven't seen any good writers that went to journalism school."
Well, P.J. O'Rourke said the same thing. I mean, it's like, if you want to, operate on human brains and be a neurologist, it'd be a really good thing if you went to school for 8 or 12 years in order to do that. But I mean, not that I'm saying anything of my own ability, but I think there's a certain artistic perspective that when your creative essence that some people have and some people don't, some people learn, some people are total like insane perfectionists. Speaking for myself, like, my greatest fear is to get criticized, and this is why part of the reason I haven't been on your show. I guess, like, what if you ask me something I don't know, and then I can't appear to be the supremely brilliant person? But
you are a supremely brilliant person, and I don't know why you've been able to answer everything that I've been talking about. I don't know what you're scared of.
I don't either.
I'm scared of a lot of things too, but mainly it's, am I going to die, and am I going to say, what the hell, the David Byrne thing? It's like, what have I done?
Well, I think you've done a lot, frankly. I think
yeah, but you always think, if you do start doing this stuff, you do it too. You always want to do more. You always want to do something. It's like, okay, I made it, I made a mark with something. I was watching, what was that movie, Nine?
Mm.
The new one with the musical with Daniel Day-Lewis. And it's basically it's basically ripping off 8.5. The Fellini movie.
Oh,
it was made into a musical. And they made the music.
Clever.
Yeah, made the musical.
I love Hollywood. They're so intelligent. The shaved monkeys that run the studios. And,
yeah, but the point with the film was, the guy gets to a point where he says, "I don't have any more ideas. Maybe he's talking to somebody at one point, and he says, "Maybe I did my best thing like 10 years ago, and I'm never going to do it again." And then I heard that, and it filled me with incredible amounts of fear and dread.
I would like to think that those states pass, but then again, I'm severely manic depressive, so I'm
well. Sometimes they don't. Think of all the one-hit wonder people. Not that I myself have ever had a quote-unquote hit, but I did something that I was really proud of.
Yeah.
And people said, "Oh, this is good. This is something really good, and we liked it." And now, like, what are you going to do now? It's like, I don't know.
Are you referring to Project Beta? Because it is highly, highly regarded.
Is it?
I want you to know that, yes.
By yes. whom?
I.
Oh, come on. I'm fishing it. Now.
I'm not going to name names, but no, I mean, I think well, a lot anyway. Of people believe that you broke down the situation in New Mexico in its various aspects down quite succinctly and intelligently.
Did you read it?
I read parts of it. Okay. I will admit to you that I read...
Did you read the first chapter?
When you gave me the blue lines a billion years ago, and
oh,
then
right,
I went
right.
back and I dig. I mean, I have.
It's, it wasn't changed.
Okay. Okay. Well, no. I
think it's essentially you call it the blue line, but the what's it called? The uncorrected
proofs.
Yeah, the uncorrected proof was not really changed that much. I think a couple chapters were changed,
mm-hmm.
and there was something written at the end of one to make it flow better, according to the editor, and he was right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, I did that, and
was
I was
that
really
Patrick.
Yes, Patrick.
You know what he told me? Not to interrupt you, but just to give everyone.
He's
out
editing
there,
Mac's book too.
Oh.
His last book.
Oh. I'm a dabbler in things like astrology, and there's a great book that I always recommend to people called The Secret Language of Birthdays, and it breaks down every, you know, 365 days.
Was that the book that you found sitting in my house when we were...
I don't know if you had it.
I had it.
Okay, because I found it...
I got it from John Shirley.
Oh, that's funny. We're Facebook friends. That's funny. No, but I found
it... He was throwing it out.
It's crazy, because I actually... acquired it and The Secret Language of Destiny and The Secret Language of
Yeah, there's a whole
else.
Bunch of them.
And they're like $75 books.
Secret Language of Toilet Paper. They're just going to keep going.
No, don't denigrate me here. No, I had this urge to stop by the Bodhi tree.
I was doing the beating
tree.
Of a dead horse thing, that's all.
Okay. But I had this urge to go by the Bodhi tree one night at like 11
o'clock.
I've
been there years.
Well, they have a free book rack in
yes.
front of the used book section,
yes.
and it had all those books. And I actually, The Secret Language of Birthdays, it's really funny because, like, it breaks down everybody's thing, like,
yeah.
really scarily, eerily, correctly, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, my day, my birthday, you know, my little mantra is there's always someone better. And I've realized, you know, that I suffer from envy. Like, I was saying a second ago that I watched this great Peter Cook, Dudley Moore movie called Bedazzled recently.
That's one of my favorite movies.
I'd never seen it.
Where did you find it?
It randomly showed up on television at 3 in the morning. And
oh, my God.
Because
I don't know if it's on. That's like in my top 5 favorite films.
Oh, that's really funny. Well, I sat there, and the way I've been trying to put things in perspective, because I'm getting older, as we all are, you know, we're one day closer
you're
to
ancient.
Death. No, it's like I've been wanting to take a martial art for years and years and years, but I've never had the discipline. I never had any discipline. I don't know how I've gotten anything accomplished, if I have gotten anything accomplished. And I narrowed it down with the help of our dear friend Craig up north, whose last name I will horribly mispronounce, and he probably isn't listening. But I narrowed it down to this one type of martial art and this one place, and it's the most metaphysical and the most existential martial art, and it's not about kicking butt and all this stuff. But I watched Bedazzled.
Tai Chi?
No, the Tai Chi on steroids, which is Aikido.
Really? Aikido? See,
Aikido.
That's the only thing I've taken. I went down to a little dojo in Little Tokyo that was in an alley somewhere, and it's got a bunch, it's like all these
that's
industrial
funny.
Things.
That's really
And
funny.
Then right in the middle of all the industrial loading docks, there's a bamboo, it's a bunch of bamboo, and that's where the dojo is.
That's funny. Well, the place that I was recommended to go to is it's like the first dojo ever opened in the country, and it's like connected directly to the mother dojo in Japan. And I called up, and after I watched Bedazzled, I was like, oh, the Seven Deadly Sins. Well, I suffer from envy. I suffer from, it was pointed out, you know, in previous times, gluttony when it comes to certain imbibings, and a couple of other things, you know, anger. Like, I'm very, very angry. And I call up this guy that runs this dojo, and it's like talking to Yoda. I'm like, I made a list of all my faults. Here they are. I lack assertiveness. I lack discipline. I lack... you know, compassion in some places. I am extremely negative, blah, blah, blah. And I just heard on the other end of the line, hur, 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 hur. When are you coming down to visit us? And I was like, and I still haven't, because I, you know, everybody's got to earn a living, and it's becoming increasingly harder to earn a living in this state of California. Unemployment here is at 15%. If it's not worse at this point, I mean, like, the world is...
I was about to say, the guy was probably, while you were saying, he was going, you know, obsessed with I you are.
Well, I was trying to figure out, like, what is wrong with me? And these are all the things that are wrong with me. And how can I fix them to the benefit of other people and, you know, to the benefit of myself, not giving myself a heart attack before I'm 35. And I mean, it's like I'm incredibly jealous of certain things that I never had the opportunity to get. And, you know,
well, I am too, but after a while, you just get tired of it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean,
you get tired of that feeling.
It's all negativity, and it's like, I mean, I'm a pretty black humored person, you know, but, you know, you got to
find. Me too. Did you laugh hard at Tony Clifton's jokes?
I did, especially since a really obnoxious comedian that I have to write into my piece tonight was sitting right behind me, and my editor wants me to write just about him. And I'm like, I don't want to give this jerk any publicity because he ruined it for me. And I wanted to punch him in the face. But I have to go home and rewrite this stupid thing so I can buy Snuggies for my entire non-existent
family. Did you ever watch those Snuggies? I was watching one of them with Sigrid, and she said...
The white guy dance.
Yeah, like, we were watching it, and Sigrid walked by, and she said, it looks like a cult.
It does. When they're on the bench, and they're doing the wave.
Yeah.
No, I
they
know.
Look like they're in a cult.
Told me. No, and the same one guy, it's like, I want to put myself... Like, I've done a lot of things in my life just for my own amusement, you know, which is why I actually came to have a newfound respect for Andy Kaufman, because he was before my time. But I really did believe when Bob Zemuda was saying, you know, 90% of what he'd do would be like at the airport or, you know, on the street corner.
Yeah, right.
And I totally understand, because it's like
we're now talking about Andy Kaufman, the comedian from the late 70s and early 80s.
Who played by Jim Carrey in that movie Man on the Moon. And the point was made.
I didn't like the movie, but Zemuda said he did. We went and saw, he had a character called Tony Clifton. And half the time, because this was part of his act, he would do Tony Clifton himself. And it was like this obnoxious lounge singer guy. And half the time, his writing partner, Bob Zemuda, would do it. Bob Zemuda is still alive. So Zemuda came out and did Tony Clifton act at this theater a couple of weeks ago.
Obese, foul mouth, beyond any, like... anything you could imagine.
I thought the point, and I don't know if you're going to put this in your article, which you might.
Loungy.
Loungy.
Just like, yeah. Oh, God. What's, like, who's that guy that, fuck.
Microphone?
Oh, never mind. His act has been sort of like.
The point of the act is the offensiveness of it. The point of the act, the problem with the people at that theater is they all enjoyed it, which was still good.
Yeah.
But you have to go out in front of people who are going to be offended, because he was doing racial jokes.
He was doing a lot of sexist jokes.
And the point of the jokes is to offend people and fuck with them. But, and that's, you know, that needs to be done. That always needs to be done.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a problem with somebody's words, you got a problem.
Yeah, I didn't find any of the jokes particularly offensive, but I did get annoyed when my boyfriend laughed at the "What do 350,000 battered women have in common?" joke. They don't listen.
Yeah.
And he laughed a little too loud at that, and he's like the gentlest guy in the world. And I was like, "What the fuck?" But it was, yeah, no.
Really, I laughed at every single one of them. And Sigrid, she was pounding me on the back while we were laughing because she couldn't stand
it. Well, Tony Clifton,
I married the right person.
That's good. Yeah, I like her. I like her. She's awesome. Tony Clifton's actually going to be performing at the Comedy Store.
Like in March?
Was it March or April? I have it in my copy right here that I've... No, I don't.
It's
March
on there.
May 16th, 2010 in Los Angeles. But I guess I was sort of in a roundabout way trying to make a point that you can't take anything too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and I never have. I mean, I've always considered myself an absurdist. That's why I like Charles Fort so much. You know, even as a kid, it's like he kind of broke down all these conventions.
Well, then I guess you can't take yourself too seriously either. Take a lesson from Charles Fort.
Yeah.
Although he had all those same problems. Remember when we were looking through his notes?
Yeah. He was obsessive and like, oh, God.
Skylar and I went and looked through Charles Fort's notes
at the New York Public Library, like research library.
And they're all written, as everybody knows, who knows about Fort, on tiny little pieces of paper that are about the size of mini Post-its.
Proto-Post-its. Yeah, they're even smaller than
the tiniest
Post-its.
He just took pieces of onion skin and anything he had around and cut them into like 1 by 2 inch pieces and took notes on them.
And in a very odd shorthand of his own devising, which only he could really understand. And this is also a man that maybe one shouldn't admire or try to follow in the footsteps of too much, because he died very young of leukemia. And was completely obsessive and burnt, you know, his first two manuscripts before his followers, you could say.
I think the Outcast Manufacturers is online.
It's at the USC it's at the USC Library, actually. I don't know. I've never seen it. I don't know that it's actually in print anywhere. Maybe Mr. X has it on, and is it the Resologist.com? He's a Fordian, you could say, quasi-scholar that lives in...
Yeah, I linked to it once.
In Canada. But Charles Fort wrote one novel called The Outcast Manufacturers. Also the name of my band. I have a band, but we never play. And all the songs were about unexplained phenomena, and that includes love and taxes and diarrhea. No, there's no song about diarrhea.
I have a bad case of diarrhea.
There's a song about the Battle of Los Angeles, though, and one about the Mary Celeste, which is really epic in a like Norse kind of seafaring battle, like storm clouds brewing kind of way. And anyway, I don't know. It's kind of like one of those things.
When are we going to hear it? Did it get recorded yet?
No, but I have a giant Casio from the 80s that it's been pounded out on a few times. And I did refrain from bringing anything that I actually performed on to get you to play it tonight, because I actually realized that Mick and I did this. I sang on a song that Mick wrote with, what's his name, Phil from Motorhead, drumming for this benefit album that like Rat Scabies and people are on, and I was like, oh, I could make him play this song, but then it's just like I'm not that kind of person. And
so, bad self promoter.
Yeah,
just
I'm
like
a terrible self promoter.
You know, when you called that dojo, you were talking to the guy.
Yeah,
I was thinking about that. There's a lecture by Alan Watts where he talks about this guy going to a monastery, Zen monastery, a Western guy. Mm. And he's Roshi or whoever the guy that runs it says, why are you here? And he says, I want to put my mind at peace.
Mm.
And the Roshi says, who's asking that question? So he gave him a koan right off.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point in there. I mean, that's why I said, was the guy saying, hur, 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 saying I too much you are.
It's like, I got that feeling.
Yeah, there's a point down in there where you're the focus is on the I, and then that has a connection to the negativity. And then as soon as I start explaining it, it's, you know, devolves into something that makes no sense, where the sense is made somewhere off where the words don't work.
Mm-hmm.
That's enlightenment or whatever. But the thing is that, you know, it's really hard to get out of that I thing.
Yeah.
Because this society is so centered on that.
This society is supremely messed up. In
you
so
know,
there
have been so many people that have just... You know, they've been doing all kinds of work, then they just disappear. Because, you know, where did that work come from? Did it come from pain? Did it come from some sense of insecurity or whatever?
Right.
And then suddenly, you know, or like a Leonard Cohen, you know, you don't hear about him anymore. Occasionally you did. But he went off to live in a Zen monastery. What, in San Bernardino or something?
No, in Mount Washington. Mount Washington. He was there for many years. I don't know if he's still
Mount
there.
Washington, like right here?
Mm-hmm.
Like up towards Pasadena?
Yeah, all you Leonard Cohen stalkers, go.
I think that their stalkers already know.
Yeah, no, they probably do, if I know. But no, it's odd, too. I mean, because we live in Los Angeles for whatever that's worth, and it's like the epicenter of, like,
me and
self-centered, you know, blatant, disgusting, it's like a vomitorium of personalities.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like,
of course, and then you get to the point where everybody knows you and you've had some success. You can afford to get rid of the eye suddenly.
Yeah.
You know, like what's his name? Steven Seagal. God, what an asshole.
Well, but some people believe that he's a reincarnated Dalai Lama. You know what I mean?
He's a reincarnated dipshit.
I reserve judgment. No, I don't. I mean, this is like, I mean, come on down to Los Angeles, and once our tour company gets the name right, you can listen to me go on about how lucky everyone is. How grateful all these tourists should be that they can return home to their normal lives and their families. And
yes, don't move here.
You know, it's like, I mean,
it's
literally
bad for you, and there's too many people here.
The freaking TV show.
We were born here, so we don't.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we have carte blanche. We can talk crap about this city all we want. I mean, it's a wonderful place filled with wonderful people and wonderful things and a very rich history. But so, you know, how many? What, 60% of the people that live here came here with notions of grandeur. And literally, the psychic residue is so thick in some parts of Hollywood. You
remember
can just,
that?
Like,
remember
feel
that's...
it oozing off you, the pain and the misery and the denigration and yeah. and the just... oh.
Remember that scene in... Oh, now I can't remember the name of it.
L.A.
So.
Confidential.
L.A. Confidential.
Was he in that? I know Kim Basinger yeah. played the Veronica Lake lookalike.
Yeah.
But
somebody walks up to his, Kevin Spacey, and he says, when I came, he's doing some kind of pissant job for some producer, and he goes, this isn't the idea I had for myself when I came to L.A., and he says, get in line.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. No, I've been reading up on history of just the film industry, and how many, I mean, dozens of, like, you know, silent movie era stars committed suicide when the talkies came about. Like, Clara Bow, like, I think is my favorite silent movie actress, and she was...
Mine's Louise Brooks.
Total, everybody goes with Louise Brooks. Clara Bow...
I do because of who she was, and that she survived. You like the tragic character.
Hey, wait, well, you know, well... Well, she did actually, Clara Bow managed to get herself together and stop, you know, stooping the USC football team and got herself a nice husband and retired to the desert with a, you know, cowboy actor. But it's like, you know, Auntie Em from Wizard of Oz committed suicide. You know, there are, I mean, like a dozen stories of these.
Yeah,
these,
she tried
you know,
to get, didn't Clara Bow try to get in talkies and she had that horrible Brooklyn
She's
accent?
She's got that Brooklyn accent, yeah. And so she managed to live with it, but, so many of these people didn't. There was this guy named Rex Dane, I believe. His career was over by the time he was 36, and he ended up peddling hot dogs in front of the studio that, you know, 5 years earlier he was one of the primary stars at. And it's unfortunate. What I don't understand is, like, Hollywood in and of itself operates as its own
economy. Theda Bara is the other one.
Economy. Oh, Theda Bara is great, you know. But then again, there's a woman who was touted for almost 2 years as the most the girl that was too beautiful, and she ended up killing herself, you know, with
Who
the
was that?
Talkies. I can't remember her name offhand,
yeah.
Because I really don't care. It's so sad. Yeah, anybody that's roped
not
into,
Peg Entwistle. She never got in anything.
No, I mean.
And then of course there's people that went crazy, like and still did films like Frances Farmer.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, it's all just really sad, and it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of depressing actually, but. Well, it's actually extremely depressing, and someone actually posed the question to me recently, the first time ever, you know, can you see yourself living someplace besides Los Angeles? And he said, I mean, I've lived other places, but not more than a year or two, you know, working on a project. And it's weird because the city really does get under your skin, but at the same time, it's like you want to get some antibacterial soap and get it out of there, you know, It's like when Bill Clinton came to office, he said, I want to know two things. I want to know who killed JFK, and I want to know about the ETs. And he was told very plainly that he could not find out about those two specific subjects.
I've heard that story. You know? Has that been substantiated anywhere?
I think so.
Has anybody ever asked Clinton if that actually happened?
Was it in Ireland that some kid, like, he was doing some appearance and... You know, some kid said, what about, you know, UFOs? And he's like, well, they won't tell me, but I'd sure like to know. Kind of like this like, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I mean, it's like, oh, well, the subject of disclosure, blah.
They told him and he's just doesn't want to talk about it.
Well, I don't know.
I'll tell you, but if you say anything, we'll kill you.
Well,
like the Bill Hicks thing, showing you the film.
It's really, I don't know. It's like. You know, India was going to be the disclosure country. Then it was going to be France. Then it was going to be Italy. And then there was,
Brazil, decades and decades.
That you go, okay, like, you know, Paolo will sit there and go, no, November 24th. That's today. And you're just like, that's the thing about, like, this subculture of ufology. It's like, I don't know where to put myself in it because I look at it all as another, it's just sort of fractured.
You're lucky
sociology.
Because you can surf outside of it. I'm kind of in it because that's the only thing really I've written about that I'm known for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of enmeshed in that culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I can see is, and some people have said this, is people outside of it don't really give a shit about it.
Yeah, it's true. And
you know, and until something happens, which it never will.
Well,
or until something happens personally to them.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch more questions.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I mean, you know, Roper polls and various polls in the last couple few decades have all indicated that, you know, the American public upwards of 80% of them believe in the possibility of extraterrestrial life. It's just they don't, you know.
Yeah, and of course, that's the other thing about being inside the UFO thing is that as soon as it's that, I think Regan Lee or somebody put it on their site a long time ago, we all know that UFO means extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only debate that goes on.
What about the Duros? What about the Ultra Dimensionals? What about... I mean, that's the
what
thing.
About,
it's like
yeah,
we,
what
well,
about
this
effects
is just,
on effects on witnesses and poltergeist phenomena and Bigfoot associated with it? It's like things that people don't talk about, but it's all part of that weirdness
right.
that we can't get a handle on because we're stuck in this one way of looking at things. And that's the other thing I say to people is like, your answer is going to depend a lot about on what you're asking. Mm. And if you keep asking mm-hmm. this question, right. you don't get the answer. Why do you keep asking the same damn question?
Right, right.
You know, try to ask other questions and see what happens to the question and to the answer. Answer when you ask a different question.
This comes back to like you know the sort of unfolding downfall of Western civilization in its entirety, and that you know
well,
like
that's
when
been
I,
going on
well,
forever.
When I was like okay, like I'll give you an example. Like this summer when I was dealing with these TV people, like the second time I came in there, it's like I went on this huge rant about how I believe that reality television was seriously affecting the intelligence of our country, our population, the world in general, and this focus on negative characters and horrible human traits and just like the Circus Maximus kind of attitude towards what, you know, people are staring at with their eyeballs, it all has an effect. And the owner of the company, the next time I had to come in, I was like half an hour late. He came down and like gave me this 20-minute speech about how they only do quality programming and they, you know, it's all, you know, very heady and it's intellectual and they don't do reality shows. And then I go, well, what's your concept for this show? Which they'd been approached to do by a network, which gave it more credence.
It went to the top of their list.
And it was like, well, it'll be just like the other UFO shows. And I'm like, oh, like the one where they spent $10,000 lowering a guy in a hazmat suit into a supposedly, you know, contaminated well from 1897, you know, because they had the budget. That's not compelling programming either, and I don't need to...
No, it's the school of let's open Al Capone's safe thing.
Oh my lord! Yeah, it's just so I don't know.
Well, you try to do something, you know. As soon as you notice this, all the shows. Not that you and I are any smarter or anything like that. We have a different taste, but all the shows you say this show gets it. They've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they can go on, and they're gone after a season. Except for South Park.
South Park.
How does that keep going? I do not understand. Probably because of the fart jokes and stuff.
I think
it's exceedingly intelligent.
I came to South Park very late in the game. I have to admit, I was raised on Pee Wee Herman and Elvira and the A-Team when it came to television, and I didn't really.
Well,
watch
I kind
of
was
it.
Too.
Yeah, I live. You know, my roommate's a media critic, so hence the. Two TVs on all the time kind of thing and more aware of popular culture.
Yeah, maybe that's another thing. But I've just stopped watching, really. I can't even watch the History Channel stuff anymore because it's
all... Oh, you love Hitler? I know you love Hitler. Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
They've gotten off of the Hitler stuff. Yeah. But, it's like ancient...
What was it?
Warfare BC or something.
I know what I saw was touted as like the greatest UFO movie of all time. And I was like, wow, so this guy's recycling UFO footage from 97 and...
Which one?
Simington.
Which
I know
one?
What I saw. It was
I've heard about it. I never saw it.
I was like, wow, okay, so there's Fife Symington, there's the National Press Club and Stephen Bassett, and here's nothing, you know, maybe, and then maybe I need to step back and go, well, maybe 80-90% of the people watching this aren't going to be familiar with this
right,
material,
exactly.
But I was at that press club meeting, or I was at that thing, or I was blah, 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 you know, so it's like hard to have, I don't know, perspective, I guess, really.
Yeah, no,
and
it's
then,
hard to
I
get
mean,
outside of it. And I try to do it continuously so that, and somebody asked me, what do you believe? You believe is UFOs? And the first thing I say is, I believe that there's something that's not human that interacts with us occasionally.
That sends most people away. That's a good answer, though. That's a good answer. I mean, nobody knows. It's physicists, at this point in time, can't decide how many dimensions exist, and was string theory correct, or was this one guy whose tenure was crushed because he came up with an opposing theory to string theory, but we went with this idea because we didn't know, and you know, it's like nobody knows anything. That's why, you know, it's like, Well, if I go to the emergency room, I say I'm an agnostic Discordian, which nobody ever gets. But, you know, an agnostic just believes that, you know, like God or whatever is in charge of, you know, us, you know, breathing and humanity and life and planets and dimensions and astrophysics and et cetera. You know, we are too small to really comprehend its vastness, whatever it is, you know. So it's like anybody that tells you they have the answer, it's a racket. Religion's a racket. Ufology's a racket. Everything's a freaking racket. Television's a racket. The movie business is a racket. It's like, that's why, you know, some people I know.
The only thing that isn't a racket was the kendo school.
Right. And I'm going to be, you know, telling people just how horrible certain aspects of all these things that are false are on this bus tour for $40 and bumming them out probably with a bunch of information they don't want to hear, but that's just my nature. So,
well, that's just it's the nature of having to live. It's a nature of having to. I talk about a friend of mine was in the OTO, and for a while we actually had meetings and we'd come and talk about Western occultism and we, you know, diagram the Tree of Life and did all this stuff. But the thing we keep coming back to is the Tree of Life is composed of these different aspects of existence, metaphysical aspects of existence that go all the way up to the Godhead or whatever you want to call it, which is Kether, which is the crown. But down at the bottom is the earth, where we are. This existence, the three-dimensional existence, it's called Malkuth. And every time we talk about, I'd like to do this and I'd like to do that and, you know, why can't we get this done? It's like, well, Malkuth is keeping us, you know, the point of a lot of this, a lot of these spiritual pursuits is to take care of that, the earthly plane stuff, so that your brain and your soul or whatever can do what it needs to do while you're here. Mm. And part of that is taking taking jobs we hate sometimes. And then, of course, I always envy people or, like, you know, I'll say, you know, how do you like your job? Like, I love it.
I've sort of done my own thing, but I'll tell you something. A personal story for me was Facebook, even though it's turning me, has turned me into Pol Pot to some degree over this past year, because the killing technology, want to kill technology and make fire from sticks and go live in the woods and howl with the wolves. This guy that I, in the 10th grade, apparently sat next to in art class found me. And I don't know how he found me, but he said, I want to tell you that I'm not surprised that you are such a successful journalist, because you're always head and shoulders above the rest of the students at our school. And it turned out, I didn't even remember him, but he was Chinese, and he like was in 10th grade, could barely speak English, and he said everybody treated him like a retard except me for some reason, and I got picked on because I talked to him even though he just couldn't speak English.
Yeah.
And he told me that he's like, do you remember that you said you tried to translate my notes to you? And he's like, I just want you to know that all these years later, and that's like, I'm 32 now. He's like, all these years later, you know, my English has obviously improved. I just wanted to say thank you. And I was like, you know what? I'm not a bad person. And you know, it's like there's little things you have to hold on to. It's like I was saying before, it's like Western society, it's like, you know, if for better or worse, I never had imposed upon me these ideas of like, you know, your uncle was a lawyer, you got to be a lawyer, your dad was this.
I never did either.
And
I was lucky.
And yeah, it's like, because it's like, I know so many people, I mean, like, okay, this year alone, right? I never would have gone to journalism school. But when I was 17, it's like, I couldn't get myself into any of the art schools, even though Caltech told me I was a genius when I was 6, and they've got Michael Shermer, of all people, is who I have to get in touch with.
your best friend, Michael Shermer.
Well, I was going to do this show. We were going to be like fighting on the show together. And
you
like,
you fought on the Conspiracy Zone test, remember?
Oh, we did?
Yeah. Wasn't it you with him?
I don't know. But
no, you know what? I think you came in.
I was
later. It was I did a test with him and who's the 17-year-old guy that started
Greenwald
and I and Shermer argued about something, and I think the moon landing thing was you.
Were the moon landings faked? And I was up against some guy that hosted Talk Soup, and I looked like I was on drugs, and I wasn't, which was ironic. But anyway, I guess I don't know. It's all. I mean, life is a very individual journey, and you can't, you know, hold a yardstick up to, you know, the people you went to school with or your siblings or the people down the street or whatever.
Right.
It's hard not to, You know, because I can sit there and go, God damn it, I never met my father, and my mom's crazy, and I have no family, and blah, blah, blah. And that's part of the reason I probably am still interested in all these...
weird things.
Weird things, because they keep you going, because even
someday
though...
someday everything's going to be right, and you won't care about it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all this stuff that's fantastical, but some of which has a basis in the same reality that all this crap that we have to deal with... yeah. Has a basis in too, and it's like...
well, you know what I think it is? It's all the weird stuff is basically thumbing its nose at and flipping its finger off to all the people that you've just been talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just in a very real way.
Yeah.
You know, and then people that are like that suddenly come up against that, they either reject it or they go through this weird personality change.
Right.
There's a real good... account of a case, the one that Stan Gordon did a investigation of while it was happening in Pennsylvania in 67.
Mm-hmm.
It was a UFO Bigfoot thing. And remember that? You remember that? They came out to see the guy, and they saw these glowing things on the ground, like glowing areas. Mm-hmm. But then the guy, like, he suddenly went into this weird altered state and started screaming about the end of the world and all this.
He
had this complete change. He got divorced, and he moved away from town and all this, you know, the same thing happens to a lot of people that come up against weird stuff. Yeah. Suddenly all this stuff we've been told comes into question.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what the fear is about disclosure is that, and my answer is always like, people can get used to anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at Nazi Germany, you know? It's like they're...
well, and you can get used to things in a good way, too, and incorporate it into... either ignore it and go on with your life, or incorporate it into whatever you're doing, because a lot of people do that.
Right.
Like I said, you can get used to bombs falling around you.
Right.
You can also get used to... I'll give you an example. We were working on Mirage Men, and one of the producers, he said, this was a film that's going to be coming out. Mark Pilkington did it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going around and talking to all
it
these...
still hasn't
these,
come out?
No, but the book's coming out and the film, I think, in the summer.
Uh-huh. Is it going to be theatrically released?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, they did it on like a shoestring budget.
Yeah, yeah. He was
like,
so...
it's like a credit cards thing
with
a little bit of backing.
Right.
But anyway, the we were... in New Mexico, and one of the producers said, I used to think all this was crap, and now we've been talking to all these Air Force people, all these intelligence people, and they're all like, yeah, there is something there, and it's aliens from another planet, and I firmly believe that. And he said, and he started freaking out.
That's not the answer that Pilkington wanted. I mean,
because
he had quite a, I mean, I remember when he was out there in Laughlin, and he had quite an agenda from what I remember. You know, it's like, you know, I used to run a UFO group, and they're all a bunch of crazies, and we're going to show them to be, you know.
Well, he's concentrating more on the way the information is disseminated, filtered, it's twisted, everything. He doesn't really care about what the information is.
Right.
I think he actually assumes that, just like I do, that there is another intelligence besides human that interacts with us occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as he takes it. That's
30-mile wide slime mold. How do we know they're not intelligent? You know?
It could be.
You know, it's like...
In a different way.
I mean...
but the thing was, this one producer said, I don't know what to think now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think there were any aliens. I don't think, you know, if I'm going to believe these people who are believable in every other way... this doesn't make any sense to me. And, it, you know, because he was like, ha, 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 stupid UFO people.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly he talked to people who he believed.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to face the fact that they believed some very strange things.
Right.
So Mark and I basically talked him down after about 3 days.
Right.
It's like, what difference has it made in their lives?
What do you think?
They still have to, you know, clean the floors and go to church or go down and buy food or whatever the hell.
Right, right.
You know, they're still watching TV. What difference does it make? So why worry about it?
Right. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. But, you know, it's like, you know, nobody has the answers. No one person, no one entity, no one organization, you know.
The kendo guy does.
The kendo guy. Dude, no, my guy's better. He's like the mother dojo guy. And he talks like Yoda. Damn it.
Japanese
Aikido
Yoda
is the only way. But no, it's belief systems. I mean, that's.
It was like, Aikido and Kendo, actually. They taught both at the place.
Oh, right. This place is straight up Aikido. I'll send you a link to their site. It's like they have like 4 pages of just quotes about Aikido, the practice of it, and how it's like designed to make you realize your place in the universe and how you are a part of this giant thing around you. You're like one element of it, and how you can how you can.
Oh, see, that's the blurring of the eye thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, but it's hard. I mean.
Remember the quote that, you know, trying to explain the stuff is trying to kill a fly with a sledgehammer? That came from Dean Radin. I always quote that to people.
Yeah, yeah. He went to his high school reunion. I think it was 30th or something. And he was Did like, he? Holy shit, I'm old.
Why, was it up on Facebook or something?
I was like, oh my God. He's a nice guy. I respect him a lot, actually.
Trying to get to a point where there's some sort of Zen flash and you get that thing that is indescribable, you know?
Have you seen Graham Hancock's new book?
Supernatural?
I don't know.
Did he have one after that? Because I finished that one and I liked it.
I haven't followed him lately.
Made me jealous.
Stop it. But you can also talk to animals. No, I was talking to somebody I worked with at a... Well, there was this great company called Amok Books years ago. And actually, we should play one thing on the way out. Because, anyway, his name is Stuart Sweezy.
We got 8 minutes.
Okay, this is like 5.5 minutes, just because. Anyhow, he was telling me Graham Hancock's last book, and he's actually in television now, this guy Stuart Sweezy, awesome guy.
Is he at UFO Hunters?
No, but he's got a connection to it. And
really?
Actually,
he called me about something related to whatever he's doing now. I was like, hey, I remember you.
He described his Graham Hancock book as being what sounded like kind of a more metaphysical extension of Patrick Harper's Daemonic Reality, which is a book that I would recommend to anybody about.
I still haven't read that.
Oh,
He spells demonic wrong.
No. He spells it properly. Meaning, you know, it's like a continuation, like the elfin lore of old and the E.T. lore of now, how it's a continuation of the same phenomenon. Anyway, that book came out in the 90s, 97-ish or something like that. You can borrow my copy. Anyway.
Please.
I'm going to put on a song just because this is the power. Words do actually have power. I'll tell you a story. There's a guy named Redelius, and he's one half of this German duo. It's back to the Germans. I don't know what it is with the Krauts, but this guy was just in town, and there were maybe 25 people to see him. Connection to Stuart Sweezy. The show was put on by a guy named Michael Shepard, who runs Transparency Records.
And
out with Redelius and an Italian pianist named Alexandra Saletti, who is very nice. Anyway, this is a piece that was kind of reworked with the help of Brian Eno, but there were no people at the show because it didn't get written up because Rihanna was playing that night and had sold out the Nokia, for instance. I'm not bitter. But I walked up to him at the end of the night and I explained how I'd seen him. I'd snuck into a club because you do have to have passion for something. I snuck into a club to see him when I was 18, underage, and an editor came up and said, give me 400 words on the show, and if I don't run it, it's because it's shit. And I said, you know, give it to me by Monday.
Perfect.
And I said, Scheisse, because he was German. And he laughed. And he looked at the Italian lady and said, oh, she said Scheisse. He, he, he. And I said, yeah, I reviewed the show. It came out. And he said, yes. And the audience gave us, he quoted back my own 13-year-old review. Anyway, I just wanted to play something of note that was real music. And not that that wasn't earlier, but it's a.
We'll probably have to end on this because I have to end exactly at 10.
And it's a super mellow track, but you may recognize it for you Egghead Eno fans. And anyway, thanks so much. Thank you, Greg. This is fabulous. There's my burrito. I must go to it now.
Oh, okay. Usually we go out and eat after.
I gotta edit my.
Okay, then. I'll just go home and I have to wake up at 6 anyway. So.
We'll get dinner. We'll get dinner. It's an open invitation to any total crazy out there. It's Venus and Mouse Kitchen. It's some undisclosed time and place in the future.
Okay. And we'll have Skylar on again, and next time we'll just play. Because it's funny, because either it's going to be music or talk, and I got very enjoyed? I got very interested in talking, so the music kind of went by the wayside.
Well, I think we have a lot of stuff that in common to talk about, you know, and we have our various perspectives on it. But anyhow, this is By This River, which is a combined effort of Brian Eno, Hair Mobius, Hair Redelius, Christine Redelius, Brian Eno's writing, and the lovely Saletti.
Any specific track?
Oh, that would be track number 15.
Okay, we'll queue up 15. And Skylar, thanks for coming on the show. Will you come on again, please?
My pleasure. Yes, yes.
Please?
Well, I'll be better
She lives
next
like
time.
A mile from me, so it shouldn't be that much of a problem.
I'll do better next time.
What was wrong with this time?
I don't know. I just, it's the technology thing, you know, and I'm shy.
All you had to do was talk into a microphone.
Even that, well, for a quadruple amputee, it's kind of difficult sometimes. So it's power of faith and belief.
Well, nobody listening would have known. It's Radio Misterioso. We'll be back next week, and I don't even know if I have a guest yet, so it might be a bunch of weird music. Anyway, I guess I'll be on early for the booty call party on Radio Let's Go. Radio Antenna is coming up after this show, and here is, what's the title?
By This River.
By This River by?
Eno, Mobius, Radelius, Radelius, Eno, and Saletti.
Wow, two Enos.
Roger Eno's not involved. He composed, had a hand in...
Whoops. Oh, yeah, okay, there we go. I just turned down the monitor instead of the... Anyway, thanks for listening. This will be up on RadioMysterioso.com within a few days, along with the Tim Beckley interview. Here's Eno, 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 and Eno.
attorneys at law.
As if on an ocean.